my friends. And I'm continuing now, a brief program, I think, with Telepathy in the Etheric Vehicle, volume, video commentary. This is the 16th of October, and Saturday here in Finland, the 16th of October. Okay. Now we have completed I'll bring this back just a little bit. Okay. The idea behind what we were doing, it should be borne in mind, says the Tibetan. This is our usual segue. It should be borne in mind that the function of a disciple, and think about yourself, may I say, as a disciple, is to focus a stream of energy on some special kind upon the physical plane, where it can become an attractive center of force and draw to itself similar types of ideas and thought currents, which are not strong enough to live by themselves or to make a sufficiently strong impact upon the human consciousness. So we are creating a magnetic attractive point on the physical plane, which will draw similar thoughts and ideas to itself, and thus build up a reservoir of greater strength for transformation upon the physical plane than otherwise might be the case. So he just went down the list of how Master Serapis conceived of the League of Nations. He passed it on to an interior disciple who passed it on to a disciple in the outer world by the name of Colonel House, who passed it on to the aspirant who was president of the United States, a certain Woodrow Wilson, and thus the League of Nations, though fairly short-lived, commenced to be. So that's a very important practical idea of how this has worked, and it's on program number 3. Okay. Now, let's see. I think this is the first idea that we've been given, and there's a second coming up. I'm not exactly sure what they're called, but there is a second. A second on its way. So maybe we will learn what that second is. And it's going to be program 4. And we're working from page 5. And in union is strength, says the Tibetan. This is the second law governing telepathic communications. And up above is the first law, which you can find in one of the earlier programs. He does us the favor of repeating what the laws are. So number 1, the first law is the following, and I'll just pause here for a moment. I'm sorry, I've been interrupted a few times, and it may happen again immediately, but I'll try to keep going here. He has announced the second law governing telepathic communication, but fortunately, he also gives us or repeats the first law. And the first law is, the power to communicate is to be found in the very nature of substance itself. It lies potentially within the ether. And the significance of telepathy is to be found in the word omnipresence. Okay, so it means that we are really everywhere within our planet, let us say, although we do not register our presence in our present state of consciousness. So the ether itself is a mode of communicating, and when it is rediscovered, the enhancement of understanding of the telepathic method will be reignited. Right now we have dismissed the ether. Science has dismissed the ether as if it is no longer necessary. So I'll just kind of emphasize that. And then the second law in union is strength. Okay. This is the second law governing telepathic communication. We cannot have it when there is a disunity, fragmentation, a criticism, lack of focus. There are so many group conditions which inhibit the natural type of telepathy, which actually it belongs to us, and which will be increased as we increase our point of tension. Okay. That always is happening. That is the Jacob's ladder, so to speak, of ascent in the rendering more subjective of consciousness. So now, in connection with this second law, what does he say? The second law is 2.2. And let me just make sure that I'm showing it to you, because, you know, I have a way sometimes of talking about something that's not being visible. The interplay of many minds produces a unity of thought which is powerful enough to be recognized by the brain. Okay. And that's the whole thing about telepathy. At first, it is not recognized. And the master's connection with our own soul is not recognized. And the actual type of communication that is building up between a like-minded and like-oriented people who follow a certain type of vibration coming from the ashram, is not at first recognized. So, but if the harmony, the unity of thought, is powerful enough, then there will be recognition in the brain. And of course, in the Aquarian age, it's going to be a telepathic age. And Gemini is there with Aquarius, and Gemini is a telepathic sign, as must be obvious from the work done by Alice Bailey, who was a strong Gemini. And that work with the Tibetan was so successful. Whether she knew what he was talking about or not, and in many cases she must not have known, because the amplitude of his understanding was so much more vast than hers, she did write it down faithfully, and it did reach her brain consciousness. So this is the second law of telepathic interplay. Telepathic interplay. Okay. Now, you know, the masters have developed this to a very proficient degree amongst themselves. And Master Moria, he talks about, it's a phrase that hit me when I read it long ago, the lightning of thought, instantaneous communication. And they can get through to each other naturally because they share the same objective, and they are related to each other in terms of love, energy, the wisdom energy, and in general a harmony which allows the passage of thought to be unobstructed. Okay, now I'm just warning myself and warning you that in a minute I'm going to have another necessary little break. It's one of those days. Okay. So, Master DK goes on. Here we have a law governing a subjective activity and another law governing objective manifestation. Now, which is which? Maybe the objective manifestation is coming through as the brain is affected. If it doesn't, you know, if it doesn't get through to the brain, then we're definitely, we are definitely missing the point of having or developing this type of telepathy. It's meant to be a method by which the divine plan is detected and then objectified. Now, we just read about what a disciple has to do. A disciple has to get through to the outer plane and create some kind of magnetic point which will attract others who are not strong enough to establish their own magnetic point. We might say, you know, that Alice Bailey, in establishing the Arcane School, did exactly that, and she attracted those who could be employed in the type of service the Lucis Trust Arcane School offered, but who never by themselves would have been able to do that. Okay. So, DK, knowing how we are, wants to simplify the situation. So he says, as we move on towards page 6, let us voice these laws in the simplest manner possible. And now, page 6. When each member of the group can function in his mind consciousness, untrammeled by the brain or the emotional nature. May I add, a trammel is a trap, is an obstacle, is some condition which inhibits freedom. Okay, but going on, when each member can function in his mind consciousness, untrammeled by the brain and or the emotional nature, he will discover the universality of the mental principle, which is the first exoteric expression of soul consciousness. Well, let's say the mind is closer to the soul than the emotions are, he said. This is why so many scientists can work cooperatively, whereas those of the religious astral persuasion do not work as cooperatively as the scientists. Okay. So when each group member can function in his mind consciousness, and I might add that it could be or should be a mind held steady in the light of the soul, then he will understand the universality of the mental principle, which is the first exoteric. Now look, the soul is subjectivity. It begins a range of ever refining subjectivity. So the mind is external to that subjectivity. It is subtle, as the astral body is subtle, but not yet subjective. If we can just get the difference between those two, it will be very helpful, because subjectivity begins with the soul and becomes more refined as we go. So the universality of the mental principle, especially if that mind is held steady in the light, and you know, this mental principle extends far into the range of subjectivity, allows the disciple to do the following, which DK says. He will then enter into the world of ideas. May I add, that world is in the spiritual triad, beginning in the world of the spiritual triad. Going on with DK, becoming aware of them through the sensitive receiving plate of the mind. Now, that is how the mind is supposed to be used. It's not supposed to be a ceiling upon which there can be no further ascent. Yeah. Okay. He then, as Alice Bailey did, seeks to find those who respond to the same type of ideas and who react to the same mental impulse simultaneously with himself, uniting himself to them he discovers himself to be en rapport with them. Well, you know, not everybody was attracted to the arcane school. And even that is the case today, or the Lucis Trust, you know, talking about sort of the grandmother of all these efforts that we are trying to bring forward. There are many people that just don't vibrate to the note put forth over many years, quite heroically at times, by the Lucis Trust. And its organ, the Arcane School, which is a continuation of an intention which Madame Blavatsky had to create some kind of, she had an esoteric section of the Theosophical Society, but she wanted to create, as I understand it, an arcane school. Alice Bailey kept that going. When you look at the word arcane, it has to do with deep, subjective, esoteric matters that are somewhat uncommon among the usual range of human beings stuck in their millions and even billions in the hall of ignorance, the first circle of petals of the egoic lotus. Okay, so, I really am having trouble with my computer, friends. So as long as it doesn't blow up in my face, I'm happy about that. But there can be some difficulties here, I think. Yeah, it's making those sounds. Well, I have followed the advice of the computer expert and am hoping that I don't have an explosion of some nature on my hands. I guess I could try for a moment to keep the ball rolling here a little bit. I'm not sure it'll work, but okay. I am struggling with a computer that has terminal illness. And, oh no, that is a difficult sound. And I don't want that sound to yeah, that sound is not a happy sound. Okay. But going back and hoping for the best. Yeah. So the DK goes on. You know, I'm always trying to distinguish, obviously, between what I say of a linking nature and what DK is saying in his text, and I hope you get it, you know. I'm trying to be careful about that. I mean, it's obvious when you look at the quality of what is being said in DK's text that it's not I who am functioning here, but I'm trying to draw some connections, you know, that may be helping us with a sense of synthesis. Psychosynthesis is easy to talk about and very hard to live, shall we say. And yet the hierarchy has that, which is the reason why they can communicate telepathically so well. Okay. The understanding of the first law produces results in the mind or mental body. Okay. The understanding of the second law produces results in a lesser receiving station, the brain. Now, we just somehow have to understand that the brain is not the origin of thought. There are conditions that we can bring about in the brain that make the passage of thought easier, more visible, and so forth. But shall we say that consciousness, this is me talking, right? Okay, is not an epiphenomenon of matter. A lot of people say, you know, they work from the bottom up and they say, well, without your brain, you're nothing. You might as well, your consciousness will not exist. And blip, that's the end. The brain turns to mush and you're gone. Well, it's a legitimate, concrete-minded analysis of how the Western world thinks, but it's not how we, as budding esotericists, I won't call any of us real esotericists yet, it is, well, we want to think differently than that, and we want to be held together in harmony and productivity by the way we think. So, repeating what the Tibetan has said, the understanding of the first law produces results in the mind or mental body. The understanding of the second law produces results in a lesser receiving station, the brain. Now, there's just, may I add, there have been such fantastic discoveries regarding the brain and the different areas and how the interplay is working within the brain and how you can turn on certain receptors and turn them off and so forth. And of course, there's been a very drug-based kind of psychiatry which follows that model. But the fundamental idea that the brain is not the mind has not sufficiently been grasped. Okay, so now the Tibetan goes on. This is possible, this understanding, I guess, through the strengthening of a man's own mental reaction by the mental reaction of others, similarly receptive. So, you know, may I add, we get together and like-minded people, and our understanding of the mind and brain is strengthened by our cooperative, harmonious, hopefully disillusioned and non-glamored and non-chaotic work with each other. So, how many people were gathered there by Alice Bailey? Well, we don't know. She said many were served, and thousands, I guess. But in terms of those who were selected from those who were attracted, only 50, 51, something like that, were considered, for whatever reasons the Tibetan saw, to be adequate material for the plans that he had in mind. So basically, we can strengthen each other through our like-mindedness as we seek to respond to the note of the ashram to which we have been attracted. Now, at first we're on the periphery, you know. We're not really venturing into the inner part of the ashram. Even an accepted disciple is not venturing into the inner part of the ashram. We have to begin with chela on the thread, and finally chela within the aura. By that time, we certainly are a third degree initiate, and we have taken significant steps into the interiority of the ashram. And I think our life will change due to our perceptions accordingly. So going on with DK, it will be found, therefore, that this process of communication, governed by these two laws, has always been in operation among the adepts, the initiates, and the senior disciples who are in physical plane bodies. Okay, it looks like I may now have to in other words, we disciples, if we can call ourselves true disciples, are just learning how to do this. But there are others who have gone further, and they have unobstructed communication, and therefore can function very efficiently with respect to the bringing through of the divine plan from the soul-infused mind, hopefully, and into the brain, where it can work towards objectifying the plan. Okay, now the Tibetan goes on. Now the operation of this process, is to be extended and steadily developed by the emerging group of mystics and world servers who, in embryo, who constitute in embryo the world savior. It's a very Ray 4, Ray 2 kind of group, and I'll kind of indicate that with the color. So what the higher initiates, adepts, chohans can do and do all the time is now being offered as an opportunity to the members of the new group of world servers, who are, it looks like, even more than world servers per se. They are the world savior in embryo. So we see what a opportunity it is to fit ourselves to be true members of the new group of world servers. Now, you know, we can use that term generically, and we will find there are many world servers. Or we can use it specifically and understand that those who have taken the second initiation can be members of the new group of world servers and should be attempting to discover others who may be approaching the second degree or others who have taken the first degree. It's a high position to really be a member of the new group of world servers. It's rather different from being a man or woman of goodwill, although such are very important in the process. Okay, ODK goes on. Only those who know something of the meaning of concentration and meditation, may I add, concentration Leo, meditation Virgo, at least the beginning of the meditation process in Virgo. Okay, DK says, only those who know something of the meaning of concentration and meditation and can hold the mind steady in the light, and may I add, this will be the light of the soul and lights beyond the light of the soul, okay, and DK goes on, will be able to understand the first law and comprehend that interplay of thought-directed energies which finds one terminal of expression in the mind of some inspired thinker and the other terminal in the mind of the attentive world server who seeks to tune in on those mind processes which hold the clue to ultimate world salvation. Well, that's an important paragraph. Yeah. So let me emphasize it. Of course, I'm trying to, in other words, may I add, what are the qualifications of being able to tune in on a higher mind source? The angel of the presence, a master, a Chohan, the monad, you know, a higher presence. What do you have to be able to do? Well, if you can't concentrate and meditate, you just cannot tune in. But if you can, you can link with that higher source and bring it right down into your own mind. Not necessarily yet to the brain, okay? That's law number two. Now, the other terminal in the mind, says DK, of the attentive world server who seeks to tune in on those mind processes which hold the clue to ultimate world salvation. Now, may I add that when we are working with Master DK's material, we have such a source, an illumined master with a highly organized mind, extremely thorough, working with the energy of meticulous entirety. We don't have to look very far, you know. We've been given the blue books, the majority of which, 19 and a half of which, are the work of Master DK. So we have the method of linking the two termini, one in his mind and one otherwise. Okay, just for a moment, I'll be gone. I'll be right back. Okay, thanks. It's a busy time here. And when is it not? Okay. So anyway, we have our method. We students of Master Decay, we are linked with some inspired thinker. And it does, who is telepathically impressing our mind. So it's the mind held steady in his thought, in the thought of the angel of the presence as well. All those are happening, okay? And then a little more from Master Decay. The thought-directing energy has for its source a thinker who can enter into the divine mind. Well, where is that? Okay, but let's look at it. Owing to his having transcended human limitation. Now, the divine mind, maybe its lowest type of expression, can be found on the atmic plane. It's the third plane from the bottom, and I'll kind of put it in green, you know, because it's not the same green as manifestational green, but it does tell us that there is a very strong Saturn mentality on the atmic plane. And I once did some calculation about Master Decay and how he said he had in his group students on the first ray, because he said that in his triad there was somewhat of the first ray to be found. So anyway, I'm looking at the atmic plane here, and I'm assuming that he has been able to penetrate into that, even if he is not fully a monad yet. Well, he is a monad, but the question is he ascended? Is he an ascended master? And we've got to try to avoid all that hocus pocus and just, you know, bowing down before ascended masters. We have to avoid that. And my guess is that at the time he was writing, he was not an ascended master, and he had not taken the initiation of ascension, the sixth degree, as when Christ, or, you know, looking like Jesus, but Christ disappeared into a cloud. That's the only way that the disciples of the time could describe it. We just don't know yet, or at least I don't, whether Master Decay has taken the sixth initiation of ascension. And the Christ and the Buddha are working on the seventh, which has to do with the logoic plane. Okay, anyway, going on with what Decay says, the thought-directed receiver is the man in exoteric expression who has aligned his brain, his mind, and his soul. Soul, mind, brain. Okay. Now, usually, we've got to have some cooperation from the astral body. At least, it's not supposed to be in the way. But soul, mind, brain is usually the way the desired type of alignment is expressed. Now, you know, I've met people who, they have a good connection between their mind, however they think it originated, and their brain. And it's pretty concrete-minded, but the brain does register it, and the soul is not even a consideration. And that means, of course, that they cannot follow this type of alignment, and they cannot or have no inclination to be esotericists. They don't care. And, of course, that's the majority of people in the world. They care to be saved, protected, go to paradise, go to heaven, not go to hell, whatever. But they don't realize that the solution is within themselves, and that a certain alignment has to be achieved. I think Master D.K. begins his book, Letters on Occult Meditation, by saying, well, we are not successful, we just don't know how to meditate within the soul. So the power to meditate within the soul is slowly developed, and maybe not so many have it, and not so many want it. It doesn't mean anything. Saving a soul, their own soul, by being fearful and watchful and believing the right things, that they want. But to actually take responsibility, to learn how to meditate within their causal body, within their egoic lotus, no, those are not yet considerations. And that's what Master D.K. said and meant when he said it will be a long time before the average individual is ready for occultism. So if we deem ourselves ready for occultism, it's quite a claim in a way, and it means we've been working on this sometimes successfully, sometimes unsuccessfully, for a long time, whether it's from the moon chain, or even for some of us, maybe from the previous major solar system. Okay, you know, that's my kind of elaboration on things, and you can certainly tell it is I who is talking and not D.K. But Master D.K. goes on. It is a fact that omnipresence, which is a law in nature, and based on the fact that the etheric bodies of all forms constitute the world etheric body, makes omniscience possible. Now, this is a powerful, powerful statement. I'm not sure what color I am up here. Okay. Omnipresence, a law in nature, which makes the fact that the etheric bodies of all forms constitute the world etheric body, that might be enough just to stop at our planet, but we don't have to, makes omniscience possible. Well, on the third level of the atmic plane, we do have all knowledge, as it is said, all, I guess, planetary knowledge. And we can extend this omnipresence as far as we want to the highest range of our universe or any particular universe. We, who are essentially the universal logos, and what a statement that is, have potentially omnipresence. We just don't know it in our little emanated mind, our little emanated self. In my infinitization book, I talked about something I called dimensional sealing, S-E-A-L-I-N-G. It was how one level of receptivity or subjectivity is not fathomed by those at a lower level of subjectivity unless the proper steps are taken to penetrate that ceiling. It's kind of interesting, you know, we can use the word S-E-A-L or C-E-I-L-I-N-G, one sealed from another. But somehow, and this is a key idea, that it's the ether that makes omniscience, the next step, relating to the second ray, possible. I've always thought that it's a combination of the third ray and second ray, which gives us omniscience, which gives us, in fact, the third aspect and the second aspect together. Now, omnipotence, we have no difficulty understanding the word, but in terms of making it manifest, well, it's just a hint that's going on in our particular solar system at this time. We're going to have another solar system, the red first ray, probably first ray personality solar system, and then omnipotence will be actually meaningful to us instead of just a word. So, you know, he's talking very much about the planetary logos, okay? But if we wish to, we can realize that our omnipresence, because we are pure being, we are pure being, we are pure being, our omnipresence extends, pervades our entire universe, and has pervaded every of limitless universes that have existed. Okay, going on with DK. The etheric body of the planetary logos is swept into activity by his directed will. Now, may I pause to say that the etheric body of the planetary logos is not the little etheric body down there on the lowest of the systemic planes. No, it is the four cosmic ethers on the cosmic etheric physical plane. That's his etheric body. So it's swept into activity by his directed will. Where's that will coming from, I may add? It's coming from the cosmic planes all together. And, well, at least from the cosmic mental plane, DK has told us the mind controls the etheric body. Now, somewhere, I mean, many things might control the etheric body, but he has said specifically that there is this connection between the mind and the etheric body. And do we have to go to the cosmic monadic plane to find the origin of the directed will of our solar logos, and even included within our solar logos, our planetary logos. The real life of our planetary logos is up there. You know, what are you going to do? Up, down. Okay, it's up there on cosmic planes. And so it filters down into his cosmic ethers, which are the planes of our spiritual attainment. I mean, no human being such as we are is going to find the consummation of his immediately available spirituality on the cosmic astral plane. The Christ and the Buddha themselves are working towards that high state. Everything we can achieve in terms of our highest spirituality is occurring on the cosmic physical plane, or the cosmic etheric physical plane, and within the cosmic ethers. That's the place to go via the Antikarana, which we are being taught to build, transcending in a way that center that we usually call the soul center. That's where our climactic spirituality is to be found. So anyway, the DK is saying, the etheric body of the planetary logos is swept into activity by his directed will. Energy is the result of his thought form playing in and through his energy body. There's so many important statements here. You know, obviously we read it once and we think we're done, you know. But it's, that was the wrong one. So, and that's going to be a little better. The etheric body of our planetary logos is swept into activity by his directed will. There are so many friends, so many strata of possible attainment, all with their own physics and their own chemistry, their own vibratory rates, their own degree of refinement. Their own range of access to phenomena that we can hardly fathom. I don't mean lower things, I mean higher things. Okay. Now, energy, this is a big statement. Energy is the result of his thought form. So in a way, we're seeing something's coming from the cosmic mental plane, if we're talking about his thought form, playing in and through his energy body, which is the four ethers of the etheric physical cosmic plane. We are living on the lowest of the cosmic planes, the most material of the cosmic planes, And it's just as if there is a thinker who is energizing an etheric body. That's how it is for a normal human being. Sorry. This thought form embodies and expresses his world purpose. Now, you know, when DK doesn't use words arbitrarily, his world purpose has to do with the advancement of his entire planetary scheme. But it doesn't have to do with the advancement, let us say, of the solar logoic scheme. In a way, every solar system can be looked at from a higher perspective as a scheme, of which there are seven major, just the way there are seven major planetary schemes on a lower level. I guess I have to say, look, we're going to get used to levels thinking. Thinking about levels and what they really are, and probably they are, among other things, states of consciousness, states of activity, states of capability. There are levels, and they are dimensionally sealed from one another unless one knows the method of achieving penetration into them. So, this thought form embodies and expresses world, his world purpose. It's a big thing. And obviously, if it is a thought form, it's a cosmic thought form where his true life lives or is lived. That's in a range that we consider to be above the solar system. The solar system we just consider to be a etheric, physical kind of system. Once we get into the cosmic astral, cosmic mental, and if we dare go beyond, it's no longer the solar system per se. Okay, going on a bit. All the subhuman forms of life and the human forms up to the stage of advanced man, you know, if you want to see a little more about advanced man, go to page 332 and 333 of the Esoteric Astrology book. Okay, so all of these stages, says the Tibetan, up to the stage of advanced man, are governed by divine thought through the medium of their energy bodies, which are an integral part of the whole. They react, however, unintelligently. So we human beings, the average human being, we are affected, yes, indeed we are affected by this kind of very high thought form. But it's an unconscious reaction. And it's like the etheric component of any being or any entity is the means of communication by which a higher type of impression can reach a lower entity, and especially the objectivity of that entity. How can I say that so it sticks? I'm going to reread what the Tibetan has said. All the subhuman forms of life and the human forms up to the stage of advanced man So that's before the first initiation. Are, the Tibetan says, governed by divine thought from the cosmic planes, may I add, through the medium of their energy bodies, which are an integral part of the whole. They react, however, unconsciously and unintelligently. And that's where students of esotericism, like ourselves, come into the picture. Advanced humanity, the mystics and the knowers, says DK, are becoming increasingly aware of the mind which directs the evolutionary process. Well, that mind is going to be the mind of Sanat Kumara or the planetary logos when it comes to our planet, and their higher principles are not found on the lowest of the cosmic planes. Going on with DK, when this awareness is cultivated and the individual mind is brought into consciously into contact with the mind of God as it expresses itself through the illumined mind of the hierarchy of adepts, we shall have the steady growth of omniscience. These are golden paragraphs, my friends. No question about it. He's telling us where omniscience comes from, basically. So we have to count ourselves. I don't think it's pride. It's just knowledge, at least as advanced humanity. So many of us have been mystics and still are Neptunian mystics to a degree. And maybe some of us are Uranian knowers. But anyway, if we are any of that, DK says, they are becoming increasingly aware of the mind which directs the evolutionary process. At least for our planet, it's got to be Sanat Kumara, who is an emanation of the planetary logos itself. Going on with DK and repeating, when this awareness is cultivated and the individual mind is brought consciously into contact with the mind of God, as it expresses itself through the illumined mind of the hierarchy of adepts, he says, we shall have the steady growth of omniscience. So I just want to, somehow this is really so important. This is the story of omniscience. Now, are we going to remember that? There's so many things to remember. So many things to remember. Okay. This is the story of omniscience. And, you know, here you see basically that I'm inserting something. I mean, think, do you want to try to define the origin of omniscience for yourself? Let's just say the Christ has become very responsive to the mind of Sanat Kumara. You know, our Father who art in heaven, and his prayers and his agony in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's constantly talking to the Father. The Father, in this case, in my impression, is Sanat Kumara as a emanation of the planetary logos itself. Now, Sanat Kumara takes initiation to the fifth degree, third, fourth, fifth, an unnamed entity that we read about in Initiation Human and Solar, but still has to be in that line, takes or is responsible for administering the Johannic initiation of ascension. And the planetary logos himself is responsible for administering the seventh initiation, the planetary logos in his fullness, and not as a kind of emanation, which this existence that is not named can be said to be an emanation, and which Sanat Kumara can be said to be. I hope that's a little bit clear. You know, you have to try to think with meticulous entirety. I'm not saying I'm very successful, but I certainly have it as an objective. And the students of Master DK, okay, they also have it as an objective, because that's how he teaches. And there is a very advanced form of meditation, not isolated unity, but inclusive reason, which includes the power of meticulous entirety. And then comes presented attributes. So there's so much to this book. Think of it, friends. This, says the Tibetan, is the whole story of telepathic interplay in the true sense. Wow. He's just given us the whole story of telepathic interplay. Becoming responsive to the Great One, Sanat Kumara, his Chohans, his adepts, his initiates. This is what we have to do. And so immediately above this statement, this is, I hope I can remember this, because, you know, it's so easy to forget unless one just ponders on a golden statement until it just makes its way into the consciousness. This is the whole story of telepathic interplay in the true sense. It portrays the growth of that oligarchy of elect souls. Now, usually an oligarchy, may I say, are those of wealth. Well, that's what we've got here. When Christ looks at all of us and says, ah, poor ones, he means it, because in terms of spirituality, we are poor. But the oligarchy of elect souls is rich in the spiritual treasures. So, DK says, it portrays the growth of that oligarchy of elect souls who will eventually rule the world. Will it be during the age of Aquarius or the age of Capricorn or when? We don't know. who will eventually rule the world, says DK, who will be chosen so to rule. And there, may I say, we have maybe the philosopher king idea. If you're going to be the ruler in society, you really need to fulfill tremendous requirements. Whether Plato wrote it all down or not, we can question. But there will be a choosing of those who are fit. And who will do the choosing? Well, someone in a very high position. And, says the Tibetan, who will be recognized by the mass as eligible for that high office through the coordination that they have established between universal mind, the individual mind, illumined by the soul consciousness, the brain reacting to the individual mind, and the group of those whose minds and brains are similarly tuned and telepathically related. Well, I'm going to have to go over that again, but not right now, because there's another broadcast coming up, and one has to be attentive to these things, and technically, if possible, get all one's ducks lined up in a row. I told you maybe one time the story of my seventh-ray eldest child who disappeared from the family on a trip to the Brookfield Zoo, big zoo in the Chicago area, and we didn't know where to find him, but he had gone through a fence and was making sure that all the turtles who were there were all lined up in a row. And if they weren't lined up and getting out of line, he realigned them. So right away, he may have only been 3 years old or whatever, but I saw the seventh ray manifesting. I think we do some things when we're very young that demonstrate even our highest rays. So, okay, we're on going to page 8. And no more of that now. When you want to study these things, you will get into it. You will study them. And you will ponder upon that which calls to you. That's what you will do. So I cannot direct your thought in that way. You will decide for yourself. And so this is the end of Program 4 of TEVVC, Telepathy and the Etheric Vehicle video commentary. And we seem to have reached the 16th of October, and we have started from page 5, that have gone to page 8, and next will come number 5 to occur on the XX of October from page 8 to whatever. All right. That's it for the moment, friends. Tuya and I and all the team, I wish you love and many blessings, and the perspicacity to absorb what Master DK has at great sacrifice offered to us. we don't realize what that sacrifice has been or has meant. But believe me, at least as I see it, it has been there. Okay, so I'm going to stop the recording and get on to another broadcast shortly, and just asking you, please, asking myself, please apply yourself in these days of opportunity before the great conclave of 2025 and before the release of the new bridging installment, which I think will be strongly affected by the first ray, moving towards the true knowledge of the Aquarian Age, which technically begins in the year 2117, according to the Tibetan. Okay, on we go, and hopefully this has worked out. Lots of love from all of us. Bye-bye for now.